As I promised at the top of the hour, we were going to talk about both food and drink. We accomplished the food part in our last half hour, so now we will get to the drink part for this Cinco de Mayo. And we welcome our good friend Douglas Miller, an associate professor in hospitality and service management, and quite a bit of a cocktail expert he is at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. And Douglas, thank you very much for being with us and sharing and teaching us about some celebratory drinks. It's always a delight to have you.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thank you. So, what is traditional? I mean, we've I'm sure you've been hearing what we've been talking about in Cinco de Mayo and in both food and drink. So, in your thoughts, where does your mind immediately go to when it comes to celebratory cocktails and drinks for this day and for, you know, any other day that we want to celebrate Mexican heritage?
Sure. What's popular right now in the United States for Cinco de Mayo would be beer and tequila. But if you're in Mexico, there's several other beverages that you consume, particularly a product known as mezcal, which is made all throughout central Mexico. It's similar to tequila, but has a few differences.
Okay, so what is it?
Mezcal comes from different types of agave. Agave is a plant that's grown all throughout Mexico and in North America. The major difference is that they, instead of cooking the piñas or the agave in ovens, they cook them in earthen pits, which lends to a little bit of a smoky flavor to it. Some people say that mezcal is smoked tequila. It is not. It just generally has a smoky characteristic to it.
How do you spell it?
M-E-Z-C-A-L.
And, look at there. Okay. All right. So it is, but it's still a distilled.
Yes, it is. It's still a distilled product.
Yep.
There is a surgence of it in the United States. You've seen quite a few more mezcals hit the market in the last couple of years. A very unique quality. You know, we often associate terroir with wine. There's definitely terroir when it comes to mezcals, and there's terroir when it comes into play with tequila.
Is it do we use it? I just wanted to try to get this straight in my head. Mm-hmm. So, do we use it in place of tequila? Do we use it instead? Do we use it in a different way?
You consume both of them very similarly. Mezcal, typically, though, the most common way that most people in the United States consume tequila would be a margarita or a plain shot. Mezcal itself, you typically don't put in a margarita, you typically sip it. You might sip it by itself or with something that is called sangrita. Different than sangria, but you might consume a little sangrita. And sangrita is typically from central Mexico, dating back to about the 20s, so it's relatively new. That is a combination of pomegranate juice, orange juice, some spices, and a few other items because it is a regional product.
And the worm?
The worm, we don't know where the worm came from. There's some people say it was a marketing ploy to separate the product in the marketplace. Some say the worm was a way to ensure the product had a certain amount of alcohol content because the worm would pickle and not break down. But we don't know where the worm comes from. The worm does naturally grow in the plant from time to time. It actually eventually grows into a moth, so it is indigenous to that area.
All right. So it is traditional to see it at the bottom of the bottle.
It's not traditional. It's more, most people think it was more of a marketing thing,
okay,
to sell the product. And some people say eating the worm makes you stronger, smarter, whatever. There's no truth to that.
Okay. thank God. And from my understanding also, it's interesting that it exports obviously to this country, but also to Japan. A lot of the export to Japan.
Yes, tequila is exported all over the world. Actually, tequila is a very regulated product. There is a governing body that regulates the rules and regulations for production, rules and regulation on exporting it. In fact, 100% blue agave tequila, which is the best type of tequila, can only be made and bottled within 7 different districts in Mexico itself.
Wow. So in in, like champagne in that regard.
I mean, yes.
Very, very specific
yes.
criteria to call it that.
Yes.
But we see such a wide range when it comes to tequila. You see such a wide range, and if you go to a good restaurant, they have a list, and it's, you know, from the $4 to hundreds of dollars.
Yes.
So, taking a page from your friend Stephen Colpan, who talks a lot about wine of that you can get a very good wine for a few dollars, and it sometimes is difficult to tell the wine that you spent $12 for in comparison to one that you spent $200 for. Is the same true with tequila, or can you really taste the difference?
You can. There's a lot of things going on in tequila. One, you want to look for a tequila that's 100% blue agave. That is the best type of tequila on the marketplace. There are some tequilas. Now, the difference is 100% blue agave and mixto tequila. Mixto tequila has to be minimum of 41% agave. The rest of it is corn sugar or sugarcane sugar to make up the difference. 100% blue agave is the agave plant. It's called blue agave because it has a color hue of blue. And there's several different varieties. There is reposado, whether silver or blanco, which is aged or rested, if you will, up to 60 days. And then you have reposado, which is aged up to a year. Over a year is an añejo. Over 3 years would be an extra añejo. Now, there's great qualities at all those different levels. An extra añejo is not necessarily better than a reposado. A reposado is not necessarily better than an añejo. They're different styles. So as the tequila ages, it loses some of more of its herbaceous notes, and then it picks on more of caramel notes, roasted wood notes in the product itself.
And there's a and true to that region, it can be sweeter and have an aroma.
It takes 7 to 12 years for the agave plant to grow.
Okay.
So that's why there's terroir involved with it. You know, there's the more mountainous regions, which tend to be more stronger taste, where the lowlands tend to be softer taste. And some of the tequila producers are starting to say exactly where they get their agave from, because you will see different nuances in the flavor itself. Now, as far as consumption, I wouldn't necessarily make a margarita or a cocktail with an añejo tequila. That you might just enjoy in a snifter, where you might take a reposado or a silver blanco tequila and enjoy it in a mixed drink.
So when we use tequila as a mixer, what should we be using?
Well, I was talking earlier, if you can get your hands on limes are incredibly expensive right now. I mean, they're running about a dollar each, 90 cents to a dollar each in a lot of grocery stores. But tequila, you know, best margarita recipe is two parts tequila, one part Cointreau, one part fresh lime juice. That's all you need.
That's it. What about the salt?
The salt.
Are you a fan of the salt or no?
It's up to the guest.
Okay.
It's up to the guest. The salt balances out the acidity, so it's up to the guest.
All right. And your preference? I mean, some people will say, purists will say, oh, that takes away from the flavor, or you don't care.
No.
Okay. All right. You're so easygoing. I love it. Douglas Miller is our guest. He's an associate professor in hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. And we're talking about Cinco de Mayo and talking about cocktails and drinks and beer, which we'll get to in a moment. You think of the margarita as sort of the quintessential
yes.
Mexican drink, right? That's the big one.
And we have no clue where it came from. We think northern Mexico. We're not 100% sure. There's a lot of myths about where it was invented, but we frankly do not know. There's actually, in a British cocktail book back in the 20s, a recipe for a drink called a picador, which is essentially the same recipe as a margarita.
Now, when you have a we have the what we can think of as a margarita glass, and I know this is the case in wine where it's often, or in several spirits, that the glass is constructed to allow the best breathing of the alcohol and so forth. Is that the case with margarita?
No.
No. Okay. All right.
And there's been, you know, if you go into Texas now, one of the big things, or Southern California, is beerritas, where you put a beer inside the margarita.
How do you do that?
You literally have a margarita, and you take a beer, and you stick it inside the margarita, and slowly pull it out, and you have a mixture of beer and a margarita.
I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm slow on this. So you take the margarita.
You have a margarita.
Right.
You take a...
And
you
then
take
you pour the beer into the margarita?
No, you take the bottle. They serve it with the bottle of beer in the margarita.
Okay.
And then you, as the consumer, pulls out the beer, which then the beer slowly empties out of the bottle into the margarita.
Okay. And that's the way of mixing it.
That's
as
the way
it
mixes.
Comes through. I see. Yes. That seems... Okay.
Yeah.
You should have brought that.
Next time. Well, the other strange factoid... The idea for the frozen margarita machine came from a gentleman at 7-Eleven watching a kid get a Slurpee.
Okay. So, oh, the Mexican heritage.
It was in Texas.
Sure. Because that's what I was having dinner with my mother and father-in-law, and my mother-in-law had a margarita on the rock. She had one that was frozen. And that's what I said. It reminded me of a Slurpee.
Yes,
and that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah.
Where the original machine came from.
And you see I asked about the glasses because they look like a big bird bath. Yeah. All right, let's talk about beer. Good Mexican beer?
You're starting to see a resurgence of craft Mexican beer. Corona, interestingly enough, the largest known Mexican beer here in the United States, was purchased by Anheuser-Busch or AB InBev. They had some issues with the Department of Justice and domination of the U.S. market. So in the United States, it was sold to a company based in Rochester, Constellation Brands. It used to be Canandaigua Wine. That's the largest known Mexican beer in the United States. You're starting to see uprise of some smaller producers. Interestingly enough, the reason why Anheuser-Busch wanted it was to increase beer consumption within Mexico. Because Corona is an American beverage, not a Mexican beverage.
It's very light.
Yes.
It is, typically with a lime.
Yes.
With a wedge of lime in the bottle or served with it. But a very, very light beer.
Yes.
And doesn't pack a whole lot of punch.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Dos Equis, what about that?
Dos Equis is growing. You've also seen Negra Modelo is another one. Pacifico is another Mexican beer. All somewhat similar. I mean, one of the things to consider is do you really want a heavy beer in a hot climate?
Right.
Do you want something light, refreshing, and enjoyable.
So you're not going to get like an IPA or a stronger ale.
You're not going to get a stronger ale.
In a Mexican. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's similar to what we would consider a summer ale.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Very, I will admit, I think my Corona consumption is really relegated to the summer.
And that's why you see ad campaigns coming out right now gearing up for the summer season.
Yeah. And then I know this is a side note, but you know, you look at something like Budweiser and other, I think Miller does this too, where they'll have a white beer with lime. Isn't that what they're ultimately just trying to do, is to copy that taste?
They have a couple things going on. They have Beerita, which is an Anheuser-Busch product, which particularly here in New York State allows them to sell a margarita-like product, even though there's no tequila in it in grocery stores.
Yeah.
In gas stations. Then you do have both Miller and Budweiser have their lime beer, which has become wildly successful. Originally, it was launched for the southern part of the United States, southwest part of the United States, but now it's national. And then Budweiser also has the beer with tomato, Michelada, that's also for sale in the United States, which is historically a typical Mexican beverage.
I've had that. I think it's really gross. But maybe you grew up with it. I don't know. Is that like a palate thing? I'm not sure.
You'll find it in Mexico where they have beer, tomato juice, some spices, and lime juice. It's one of the ways that they'll consume beer.
So here's my question.
Yes.
Is there a way of making, like, is that a good representation of what it is? Or is that kind of, you know, the gross commercialization, and that's what you get? And maybe if you had it in its truest form, it would be better.
Gross commercialization, particularly targeted to the rising Latin American community.
Okay. Because to me, it just tasted like a can.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Make it yourself.
And it would be
better, much better
and palatable.
make it yourself, opposed to buying it, make it yourself.
Okay, I like that. And if we want, and I like the idea of the craft beer movement growing in Mexico, growing yes. in the southwestern part of the United States. So, but again, a lighter beer, I assume, mm-hmm. but we're seeing more flavor, more distinction.
They're starting to come across the border. There's a few out there, but you're starting to see them rise.
Which is good news.
Yes.
So if we want to celebrate tonight, mm-hmm. what would you suggest?
I would suggest getting a mezcal, which is quite popular in Mexico. It has a nice earthy tone to it. And put it in a snifter glass or rocks glass and just sip it like you would any other great beverage.
That's wonderful, and enjoy it in its truest
yes.
form.
Yes.
Terrific. Douglas Miller is an associate professor in hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Douglas, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing on this Cinco de Mayo.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.